May it please the Court. This case has a similar but not exactly the same procedural history, and I think I'd like to try to distinguish it a little bit. It first came to us, to our attention, as an overdraft notification. It actually predates the Court's new rule, January 1st, 2010, by a couple of months because one bank was sending us notices in the latter part of 2009. And that's how we got one of the complaints that we're talking about. And the other one was just a client complaint. We investigated, like we do with these overdraft notifications in the past year, we do trust account audits of many of the many of those reports that come in from the banks. And we, upon considering it, stipulated with the respondent, with Ms. Pursley, that we thought probation would be in the best interest of everybody. The hearing panel did have some concerns, and I'll talk about those, and they rejected that idea and instead thought that suspension, an actual suspension without probation, was a better sanction. So under Rule 519, the case automatically comes to the court, and when Ms. Pursley then rejected the panel's recommendation for an actual suspension because she obviously preferred the probation. Now we're here, and the parties are still suggesting that probation is an acceptable sanction and is probably the best one, we think, to accomplish the goals of the disciplinary process. The panel's concerns were, as I understood them and as they wrote them, and during the hearing, I picked up the same thing as what they said. I mean, my sense was what they wrote in their decision. And they didn't say anything that these facts look a lot worse than you guys stipulated to. There wasn't anything like that. There wasn't that this looked like stealing and you guys didn't allege it was stealing. Instead, it was more that, well, the wording is that there was an unreasonable risk in their view that Ms. Pursley would be able to maintain a practice, maintain an income which would meet her needs. And then also, as they concluded, that she should be suspended because that way she could focus on putting in place systems and procedures conducive to an ethical and efficient legal practice, and they didn't believe that she could do that at the same time as practicing law. They had some concerns that she hadn't completed a self-audit that she had picked up from the bar's law practice management website, and that she was really just had a part-time practice, so there was not momentum to go forward with a strong practice. They were frustrated, I think, with her minimal recollection of the two prior admonitions that she had from 2005, the facts of them. I mean, she remembered that they occurred, but didn't really recall the facts that well about them. And I think that frustrated them. And then I think they were concerned that cash for fees was a routine, and that she was still having some financial problems. I think, though, that this is a classic case for probation in our view. And frankly, we thought that's what will happen if it was contested, and regardless of what we asked for, that's what would ultimately happen. I think it fits Rule 5.225, the probation rule. It's not a disbarment case because there's not intent to steal, and there's no other intent to do any egregious harm. These are, we think, correctable problems. We obviously don't think it causes the profession to fall into disrepute for us to try to remedy the problem. And we think that there is a lesser likelihood of harm to the public if these problems are addressed with the disciplinary processes systems assistance, and frankly, she seems very willing to participate in that. And then we have, I think, some fairly strict terms and conditions. We do have in place monitoring and reporting, regular monitoring and reporting. We put an ethics school requirement, a CLE in trust accounting, a law practice management consultant. We don't have very many of those in Missouri, but we have a few that are willing to work with the people that are on probation and in diversion as well.
Her brief indicates that she's already undertaken some of the recommendations. Is that correct?
That's my understanding, Mr. Work, and I hope can, I'm sure he'll be able to tell you exactly which ones she has accomplished already. And then they would also include trust account audits by our office and some malpractice insurance and then restitution to the complainant, Mr. Thomas, who paid several hundred dollars on several different traffic tickets, including one that there was a warrant issued because neither she nor the client appeared, and then she didn't tell her client that she wasn't going to be able to appear. At that time, I think Mr. Workman will say that she was very ill. She was also taking care of her mother and also taking care of her sister, and so it was a troubling time and wasn't actually in Missouri even at that time, but she had taken the fee, and the fee, in fact, was for a case in Kansas, and her Kansas license was currently inactive.
Counsel, there's some indication that she was suffering from some problems. One, I think, was adult attention deficit disorder, but she had some other problems of that nature and psychological problems. Have those been addressed or solved, or were those addressed and solved in your proposal?
That's a good question. I thought about that as more and more I was reading it in the last week. And it's not addressed specifically in the terms that we've set up. If I were rewriting it today, I would include that in there. I mean, but I feel obligated a little bit to try to stick to the agreement from our perspective that we offered. But I did recognize that, too, when I saw that, and I thought, well, that would be another good way to make sure that these the problems with the profession that could be have some cause from the personal problem, emotional
problem. Is there any indication those were ever addressed by her or subsequent to the hearing that those were ever addressed, those problems that she had?
I don't remember anything being in the record addressing that.
And what terms would address such an issue?
There are some cases where we have agreed that the person, that the lawyer under probation should also be go get a mental health evaluation, and then the mental health evaluator would report to us, and then we would say we would find out what they recommend for follow-up. And so it would be condition of the probation that they get the evaluation and comply with the recommendations of the evaluator, and that both they and the respondent attorney and the evaluator report to our office just as we would after a trust account audit or those sorts of things. And I mean, if the court is interested in that sort of thing, then I'd be happy to supply some standard conditions that we would write in those types of cases.
Is it of concern that she has not addressed those problems that she claims or states were the cause of some of these problems?
Well, it's not in the record, and I understand that it could be a concern to the court. It may be that she has. And one of the things that's difficult about these cases that I almost wrote a reply brief about is that we don't have a very good system to talk about facts that occurred after the disciplinary hearing panel is concluded, because the rule is that the record is what the panel provides. Things do happen in those several months sometimes, and Mr. Workin put them in the brief, and I have no objection in this particular case, and I assume that what he reports in his brief is accurate. That's not always going to be the case from our perspective, and I do have concerns about things beyond the record and what has happened after the record. And typically, we try to do motions to supplement the record either by agreement with the parties or that sort of thing. But there's nothing in the record, Your Honor, to help at this point. One of the things that I wanted to also talk a little bit about was the overdraft rule itself. You know, we've had these cases, and we're still figuring out how these cases are going to work out. We have, in the first three quarters of the last year, we had 225 cases. That's what we would have expected from the other states of our size. 18% of them were bank error, where the bank said, it's our fault. It seems that's a little scary. 16% were math and accounting error on behalf of the lawyers. 10% are failure to reconcile. Some of these overlap, of course, or could overlap. 30% are lawyers who paid out money too soon before they made sure that their incoming checks had clear. 6% looked like commingling, and then 1% or so looked like misappropriation. A quarter of those cases we closed without any discipline. Now, you know, that sort of matches the bank error, a little higher than that. Half have been closed with caution, a few diversions, 10% or so, admonitions. And those admonitions, cautions, and diversions, we require or encourage trust accounting manual. The court, you know, the bar has this great trust accounting manual that lawyers ought to use. Go to a trust accounting CLE, go to ethics school, and we try to offer to help in those ways as well. And then with those, you know, that smaller 6%, those are the cases that we think will end up here, and we'll see as we go how those cases will pan out about what kind of discipline is appropriate. I'm going to save the rest of my time unless there are any questions at this point. Thank you.
Good morning. If it please the court, as is typical of arguments before almost any court, the best laid plans are always set aside, and I'm going to jump right into addressing the question with regard to the mental health issue, if I could, and then go back to my original plan. Since the first day that this incident happened, Kathy Pursley has been under the treatment of a doctor. She's taken medication for the problem. She's counseled with me and with other people with regard to how to not put herself in a set of circumstances where she found herself back in 2005. I say these things not in any way, shape, or form to excuse what happened, but it's important that we have a perspective about what happened. There's a time in her life when an aunt of hers that was her special aunt had died, when her mother was severely ill, when her sister was having issues with her own children, and I know that this court will not be surprised to find out that the family looked to the one person in the family who seemed to be capable of handling that, the person with the law degree. And to say that Kathy Pursley became overwhelmed is an absolute unadulterated understatement. Let's talk about now, if we can, how long I've known Kathy Pursley, and make that short. She was a secretary in my law firm. She was a paralegal. I knew her as a law student. I knew her once she passed the bar, and I've been in contact with her over the years. When she came to me telling me that she had this problem, I immediately said to her, "What can I do to be of help?" And I did that not because I'm any great shakes. I think that there's many lawyers in this state that do these kinds of things. At the time, I had already taught in the discipline school. The materials that she used from the Missouri Bar were ones that I wrote. I say that again, not because I'm any great shakes. You know, if showing up is 90% of the deal, then I've shown up. I said to Kathy, if you're looking for a good result, you can go find anybody. If you're looking for help, you've come to the right place. I immediately gave her free office space in my office because it was there and it was available. I immediately began to talk to her with regard to some of the issues that she'd had about her practice. I began to monitor what was going on in her practice on a day-to-day basis, and I appeared at all of the hearings in this case. I told her the only way that I would work with her and help her is if she absolutely unadulteratedly did every single thing that the OCDC office asked her to do. And we've done that. We've done more than that. Because I told her, we're not going to wait and see what it is that they ask her to do. You're going to start doing it now. And I'm not going to go over everything in the brief with regard to that. It's all replete in there. You've all read the brief. I do want to say, though, that when I finished the disciplinary hearing panel, I made a comment to them at the end. much like the comments I've already made here, but I added this part to it. If there has ever been a lawyer that I've known in over 40 years of practice that was entitled to a set of circumstances where she could be put on probation, suspended but put on probation, Kathy Persley has earned the right to ask for that. So why we're here today, quite candidly, and you've heard what the Office of Chief Disciplinary Counsel has said, I can't really add to it other than the fact the reason we're here today is because the disciplinary hearing panel didn't see it the way that we saw it. Let's talk about why. It wasn't racist. It wasn't because she's black. It wasn't because she had dreadlocks. It wasn't any of those kinds of things. People in that panel were exceptionally professional and handled themselves very well. I told Kathy Persley prior to that hearing, go in there, be candid, be overly candid. And if you don't remember the details of something that happened during a period of time when you had some mental health issues, you simply tell them, look them right in the eye and say, I do not remember. What were the three things we're talking about? One of them was that she had approached the judge in Johnson County, Kansas, which is a practice oftentimes done in Kansas City, about a continuance, and oftentimes it could be an approach on an ex parte basis. Believe it or not, that happens all the time. But that's a problem here because she did not have a current license to practice in Kansas. The second thing that was a problem was she had told an individual, you've got to show up in court. The judge has ordered you to be in court every single time you have a hearing. She was ill. She could not go. The individual didn't show up, and there was a warrant issued for that person's arrest. That's a problem. But I do not believe that she's the one who caused the issuance of the warrant. It was the individual simply not showing up. Are those two incidents something to be swept under the rug? Absolutely not. So what's the most egregious one? The most egregious one is, in my opinion, unadulterated, sloppy bookkeeping with regard to her trust account. Again, an audit was done by the OCDC. All those issues were looked at. All of her books were given over to them. Her checking account was there. I came down with her. We sat down. And anything that they wanted, they got. And anything that they wanted in addition, they got. The amount of money that was involved, I believe, was less than $500. I don't believe that there was any intent on anybody's part. I don't believe the OCDC thinks there was intent on anybody's part to steal it or to take that money for her own benefit to the detriment of the client. Did she take it for her own benefit? Absolutely. I think the amount in question was about $250 or $300. So again, why are we here today? We're here because the disciplinary hearing panel, after having looked at Kathy Persley, looked at her previous discipline, where she, in fact she has been disciplined, but they were both relatively low-level disciplinary actions, said that they believed that she should be suspended for an indefinite period of time with the right to reapply and should not be given probation. Again, if there's ever a person who's ever been in a situation where they have earned the right to ask for probation, she is the person that's done that. I know you've read the briefs. I'm not going to go over them. I know you know the Coleman case. I know you know the Missouri standards. I know you know the ABA standards. What I'd like to be able to do is to answer any questions that you've got.
As to the psychological issues?
Pardon me?
As to the psychological issues,
yes,
the mental health issues, is there a current plan that could be formalized or made a part of any probation?
Absolutely, Your Honor. That would be an intention, and we would be more than happy to do that. The reason we did not actually proffer that to the OCDC before is because it was already being done on a voluntary basis. But clearly, if this court felt that it needed to be formalized, we would simply take what we already have in place, disclose it completely to the OCDC, give them all the records that we've got available, and ask for them to be able to enter into a plan with us to continue your monitoring.
Mr. Phillips also indicated that much of what is in your brief is outside the record, and that they have not been able, that sometimes there is supplementing of the record of all that she's done. Is that also something that could be done so that they are not, I am assuming everything is done in good faith and what is stated in your brief is correct. Is that information also available to OCDC?
Absolutely, but I have to be, in all candor, I did in fact disclose, and my client did disclose to the hearing panel, A, what we had already done, and B, what we intended to do.
So it was, portions of it are in the record?
I believe, well, I think, first of all, the whole list, which I think are 13 items, are in the record. What we had already completed at the time may have been in the category of 3, 4, 5, 6, and what we've now done is to go on and do more than that. I said to Ms. Pursley, Kathy, if you're looking for a good result, lots of people can help you there, but what I'm here to do is to try and help you. And I'm no big shakes, but I'll do it because I've been there, done that. I know what this is all about. I've been teaching about it, lecturing about it, talking about it for 40 years. What we've got to do is do something about it and not just sit back and let somebody, you know, attempt to slap you on the wrist, because this is more than a slap on the wrist. Thank you very much.
We would be happy to have any support documentation for what's been added. It is a complex setting. I mean, the cases are so different than criminal cases and civil cases because of the nature of the way it gets to the court, and the court has a de novo review. And is a de novo review the same as a de novo trial? Probably not. Because we don't have a way of offering evidence at this level for the most part. So I think that's a question, a bigger question as well. But we'd be happy to receive and review documents in support of, you know, the records to date, the things that have happened since the disciplinary hearing panel's hearing. Thank you.
Very good. Case is taken under submission.